For centuries, camel caravans have traveled from Timbuktu across the unforgiving Sahara and to a remote settlement in Mali to bring back valuable slabs of salt from the moon-like mines of Tau Deni. Because he feared trucks would soon replace camels and a way of life would be forgotten, Michael Beninov decided to make the trek himself and to write about it. His book, Men of Salt, Crossing the Sahara on the Caravan of White Gold, is published by the Lions Press, and I'm very pleased it has brought Michael Beninov to my show today. Hello.
Hi.
Your journey begins in Timbuktu, which is a name that was used for years to represent someplace far off, remote, exotic. Why was it shrouded in mystery for centuries?
Well, back in the 14th century, a caravan had crossed the Sahara and arrived in Cairo, carrying more gold than anybody had ever seen on a caravan before. And the word was, this caravan originated in Timbuktu.
The name is so evocative.
It is. And for hundreds of years after that, Europeans who had heard about this caravan tried to find this place, Timbuktu, and for centuries nobody could find it.
Is it that difficult to find?
Part of it is where it's located, but also people coming through the desert from the north either ran into trouble with the nomads who lived there or died of thirst. People coming from the west succumbed to disease.
And it is a dangerous place to travel. You tell a story now, this is a long time ago, 1805. A well turned out to be dry, and 2,000 men and their camels died as a result.
Yeah. Yeah. Survival out in this area is dependent upon very scarce water sources and mostly on how fast you can actually travel through it.
Well, since salt makes us thirsty, why is salt so valuable?
Well, salt was used both for human consumption and for animal consumption. And back in the day, not even 200 years ago, the salt was used like currency, like paper money that we use today.
Well, it's pretty easy to get today. So why do they still make this difficult journey to the salt mines of Tau Deni? Is there something about that salt that makes it particularly valuable?
Well, the salt comes out of the ground in solid slabs. It's solid rock salt, and so it's very durable and can last a long, long time. Whereas sea salt really degrades very quickly in the environment in West Africa. And so having this kind of salt that could last for literally years was worth it for them to go get it.
Well, we're talking about a trek that takes 40 days and is incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So who are the people who make this trek?
The people who make this trek are members of the Barabish tribe who live out in the Sahara. And they are, most of the tribes in the area are typically divided into two types, the Tuareg and the Arab. And the Barabish are considered to be one of the Arab tribes.
Do they practice standard Islam or a variant of it?
Well, they practice Islam, but it's pretty different than the Islam that we see in the media every day. One of the main differences is that in this part of the Sahara, the women never have to veil their faces, and the men actually are required to veil their faces many different times.
And why is that?
It's because these cultures are still very closely tied to their pre-Islamic animist roots, and that culture was a matriarchal and matrilineal culture. So the women here in this part of the Islamic world actually have a lot of power and a lot of autonomy. It's the women who own the tents. The women own the herds of goats and sheep. They can divorce their husbands. So it's really, everything you knew about Islam, it's not the case in this area.
Your first order of business was to get a guide. And didn't some people try to scare you off?
Well, the idea of anybody, to the people who live there, the idea of anybody voluntarily embarking on this trip is a sign of insanity.
You mean you only do it if you really need the salt?
Yeah, if this is your job and this is what you have to do, you do it. But otherwise, nobody wants to do this. Originally I tried to get myself on a caravan, and it was explained to me that no caravan would actually accept me if I didn't have somebody who was like a guide, really one of their own, who would look out for me and make sure I stayed out of trouble.
Otherwise, you might be left for dead or
Exactly.
If you got sick or hurt yourself, you might just be left not slow down the caravan because they move fast.
Yeah, and they told me, you know, in no uncertain terms, they were not going to slow down. They were not going to wait for me. So I had to keep up.
So how did you wind up with your guide, Walid?
Through a middleman in Timbuktu who, you know, knew the right people on the caravan.
How dangerous is this ride?
Well,
how hot does it get?
During the day, it got 120 degrees and more. And then at night, sometimes the temperatures were below freezing. And part of it's really a stamina issue because we would be riding and walking for 15 to 20 hours, literally nonstop between camps. We would eat, you know, one small meal a day and get maybe 2-3 hours of sleep, you know, each day.
Are the wells that far apart? Is that why?
The wells were about, you know, between maybe 3 and 5 days apart. But yeah, definitely the critical factor in survival here is how fast you can get through it and get out of it.
So I've traveled through the desert of the American Southwest. I know you're from New Mexico. And although I've been in a car, I can imagine that I could, in theory, have walked across Death Valley in 2 or 3 days without the help of a camel.
Mm-hmm.
This is much faster than anything we can imagine.
Yeah. And really, you know, the camels are there because if you're walking, you know, 15 to 20 hours nonstop, it helps to get up on the back of a camel and also to carry all the supplies for the journey and for the journey back.
Are there sandstorms?
There are sandstorms, yeah.
You could have brought a cell phone, but you chose not to. Why?
Right. Well, a number of people had urged me to bring a satellite phone just in case something happened, because out there, you know, there's nothing out there. There's no resources. You can't call AAA or something like that.
We have a camel that broke down.
Right. Exactly. And so people urged me to bring a satellite phone, but because my goal was to experience the way of life that these people live, I felt like bringing a satellite phone would really get in the way of that.
And you didn't want to come across as a pampered American.
Definitely not. But mostly, I mean, you really experience yourself and your environment very differently if you can just, you know, press a few buttons and call on the choppers than if you know you're on your own.
My guest is Michael Benanav, B-E-N-A-N-A-V. His book, Men of Salt, Crossing the Sahara on the Caravan of White Gold, is published by the Lions Press. And it started off rather badly for you. You had a sinus infection. Do you normally have sinus infections?
You know, I get them every once in a while. But getting one really the day before I was supposed to leave on the caravan was bad timing.
Especially since water is one of the things that you might take. And you didn't have a heck of a lot of water.
Yeah, there's very little water. And really just, you know, having a fever and riding a camel and dealing with the heat. And also here, knowing all of the scary stories of things that had happened to people in the past, it was pretty nerve-wracking.
And you say you had to accept the reality that you weren't in control. You write, I couldn't afford to hope that we would stop to eat or rest at any given time. Since when that hope is dashed, desperation sets in and endurance wanes.
Right. Once we were on the trail, you know, it was pretty clear that Walid, who was my guide, he was the person setting the agenda. And basically everything out there looked the same, so there was no way to tell even how much progress we were making. And so I basically had to give it over to Walid and say, okay, you know, I trust you and, you know, to get us there safely.
But you begin chapter 3 with 3 words, pain, melancholy, resignation. Did Walid
right.
have much sympathy for those feelings?
He laughed at me quite a bit. But, you know, I think there's the first week for sure was a real breaking in period. It was definitely the toughest part where I was getting used to the rigors of being out there and traveling that way. And, you know, once I was able to stretch my comfort level to what was demanded, things got a lot easier.
Well, we talked about the sinus infection
and
the heat, but what about riding a camel? You get saddle sores? Is it the same as riding a horse?
Well, I'm not much of a horseback rider, so I had always thought that saddle sores meant, you know, you just were a little sore. I didn't realize that it meant you actually got sores. And so after the first couple of days, I had some bloody sores that I had to deal with. But, you know, again, after a little while, they heal and you get used to it. And it was the first week that was really the toughest.
What about adjusting to the diet? What is their diet?
The diet mostly is rice smothered in this goat butter that we kept in a bottle, a clear bottle, hanging in the sun day after day after day.
Didn't get rancid?
Oh, sure it did. But they didn't mind. Sand was blowing into the food, and then we'd throw in a few pieces of goat meat from this carcass that we were, you know, hauling along with us. And normally, wherever I travel, I can get accustomed to whatever they eat, however repetitive it is, no problem. But the diet out there definitely got old after a while, along with the goat butter.
And yet you recall this experience rather lovingly in the book.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that it was unbelievably tough and incredibly intense. And for all of the difficulty, it was one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my life.
People bond with their horses. Do you bond with a camel as well?
I felt like I bonded with my camel, although I'm not sure he felt he bonded with me.
Which is different with a horse. A horse often will, at a certain point, nuzzle you, and you feel, oh, gee,
yeah,
this animal likes me. You at one point, tried another camel, and uh-huh. You said that was like going on an SUV while your camel was an old VW bus.
Yeah, yeah. My camel, Lachmar, who I speak of with only fondness, he was 15 years old, which is about middle age for a camel. And he would not be making this trip to the salt mines more maybe than one or two more times. So he was definitely, you know, kind of an old beater of a camel.
Uh-huh. So they gave you the easy-to-ride camel, in effect.
That's one way to look at it.
But they can go incredible distances without water, can't they?
It's really unbelievable. These animals, there's no way that you cannot respect them. Coming back from the mines, the camels were, you know, fully loaded, carrying 400 plus pounds through, you know, unbelievable temperatures, went, you know, about 2 weeks without drinking any water at all.
But then when you do get to water and the camels drink, they drink before the humans, and you got to drink the water that they already have drunk from. In fact, you drank from your camel's bowl.
Yeah, yeah. We would fill up our guerbas, which is what we carried the water in, from the same trough right after the camels had drank. And, you just drink it. It's water.
Well, you're here.
Yeah.
But at the time, none of this bothers you? I mean, we all have our limits. I probably have higher tolerance rates than most people. I've eaten insects and done other things. But I'm not sure drinking from a camel's bowl is one of the... I wouldn't drink from a dog's bowl or a cat's bowl.
Well, I tried to convince Waleed that maybe we should take our water before the camels drank. He thought that was ridiculous, and so we didn't do it that way. And, you know, you can't really complain, so...
What are the towns like, the ones that have wells? You went to a place called Arawan.
Yeah, Arawan is really the one town in between... between Timbuktu and Taudeni, the route is about 500 miles. And about 200 miles north of Timbuktu is this little place called Arawan. It's like, you know, a mud brick island out in a sea of sand. It's very isolated, very primitive. There's no electricity. There are no shops. People just kind of live out there because that's where these really deep wells are.
And then the final destination, the salt mining town, Taudeni, used to be a place that they sent prisoners to as a kind of a gulag.
Yeah.
It must be pretty desolate.
It's unbelievably desolate. The terrain out there is just, you know, as harsh as you can imagine. That's how it is.
I saw a film about salt mining in Tibet, where the traditional way is to load up the yaks, and now they are competing with trucks that come and just take up tons of sand and do it a lot quicker and more efficiently. The same sort of thing happening here?
I think so, although it's hard for me to know exactly what the situation in Tibet is because I haven't been there. But like you mentioned earlier, when I first began this project for Men of Salt, I thought that the camel caravans were in danger of becoming extinct very soon because trucks were now running the salt route.
And wouldn't it have been a lot easier and more efficient to use trucks?
In some ways, yes. Trucks are faster and trucks can carry more. But the way that the economy of the system works, camels are actually pound for pound of salt much more profitable than trucks are. And so the people who drive camels really don't see any compelling need to upgrade.
Even though it takes a lot longer, it takes 40 days, I'd imagine the trucks would take 10 or 15 days.
Yeah, the trucks can do the round trip in a week, which takes a lot less time, but running a truck back and forth takes a huge amount of investment in cash up front to pay for the gas, the maintenance, the vehicle itself.
Can you imagine ever putting yourself through something like this again?
Doing this kind of a trip? Maybe something like this. I don't know that I would go do this exactly again. Although the more that it recedes into the past and I remember only the good parts, the more I think, well, maybe.
Michael Beninov's latest book, Men of Salt, Crossing the Sahara on the Caravan of White Gold, is published by the Lions Press. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks.